Health and the Ad Council.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris.
Jane Oates, the Assistant Secretary for the Employment and Training Administration at the Labor Department.
Veterans put in their military job code. You're in the Army and you're a 91B. Put that into My Next Move for Veterans, and you can get all the jobs that utilize those skills in the civilian workforce so that we can target your work search to those specific employers.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.
From fiddle enforcers to dolphin trainers, federal employees have some pretty cool jobs. Check out our Cool Jobs in Government series at federalnewsradio.com, search term cool jobs.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today on the phone, we have Tom Kellerman. He is a chief technology officer for a company called Air Patrol Corporation. Good morning, Tom. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
You know, on the drive over here, I probably passed by 10,000 different mobile devices in cars and in trains and people walking down the street. And I think a lot of my listeners who are federal IT professionals are challenged with trying to protect the other citizens in the country here and the other employees in the federal government from attacks and from using mobile devices in a secure fashion. And that's why I wanted to have Tom come on the air and talk about Air Patrol Corporation. And if you want to find more information, it's pretty simple. You type in airpatrolcorp.com, and you can read a blog there and get more information on the company. And they focus in on helping not only federal people but commercial people in managing mobile devices in a secure fashion. I think it's a hot topic and it's an appropriate topic. But the topic that everyone wants to know is about you, Tom. How'd you wind up with this company? And give us a little bit about your background, please.
I'm a Foreign Service brat, and I've been dabbling with hacking since the age of 11, so that's 25 years. Joined the World Bank security team after grad school. Was focused on cyber intelligence and penetration testing of financial institutions around the world. And then spent 5 years with a company that specialized in red teaming penetration testing called Core Security Technologies. And therein developed newfangled attacks to attack OS systems specific to wireless. And was tired of basically just scrimmaging and finding holes in attack paths and systems, and wanted to identify some viable solutions and or create them. And that's basically how I ended up at Air Patrol.
Great. I remember back in 99, a long time ago, I was speaking to a group of federal IT professionals in Williamsburg. And I did an hour talk, and then there was a Q&A afterwards, and they said, well, where do you see the area of growth in the next 10 years? And I said, I said, wireless and security. So maybe I was prescient or maybe I was lucky, but you must have bet on that horse 10, 15 years ago as well, huh?
I'm being a Foreign Service brat, I've always been obsessed with security in general. I knew virtual reality was coming because I read a lot of science fiction.
Yeah. All kinds of different countries, all kinds of security implications. Yeah, I think both you and I have resided overseas, and so I think we may not be as naive as others. And I try to encourage people to maybe take off their rose-colored glasses. How's that for an academic reference?
I concur.
Let's first talk about the whole rise of wireless technology. I mean, most of our listeners know about wireless networks to have them at home, and now we have a lot of smartphones. If you combine all these devices, you find out that some curious things are starting to happen. What's starting to happen is people are combining social networks with mobile devices, and now we have 35% of Twitter accessing Twitter through a mobile device, not through a desktop. And so we have what someone from your perspective might say is a perfect storm to attack either an agency or perhaps a federal, maybe a financial institution. Would you agree?
I would agree. And also people need to recognize that it's not a Pacific environment. And it's not just nation states, but other corporations and organized crime that have infested this environment and essentially are on a mission to colonize it. And it's all about colonizing more points of presence within this environment to maintain omniscience. It's not about disrupting service so much as they want to be inside your device and they want to know what you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think omniscience is a goal I had when I was a young man, and I gave up at about 24. It was just too much to know. But now with the resources out there, all kinds of things are happening. I pulled up an article for this interview, and it was just this week in Information Week. I don't know if you saw it or not, but the DoD approves Dell Android tablet called the Streak 5, and they compared that with the BlackBerry devices that are out there. And I start scratching my head, and I go, well, isn't BlackBerry the company that had the outage a couple weeks back? And I mean, it's just these are all front page of the Washington Post topics now, aren't they?
They are. It's getting more advanced with relation to both blocking and tackling the threat, as well as realizing and appreciating the sophistication and organization of the adversary.
So you walk into a desktop world, and you see, you know, Windows, of course, and maybe some Unix. But I mean, you have, you know, three or four different operating systems to worry about. But if I stand out here in Wisconsin Avenue and I just maybe take a casual glance of the phones that walk by, I mean, there's maybe four or five, maybe six or seven different operating systems, and I can't count the number of hardware devices. And so that puts someone like you, who's interested in security for mobile devices, that puts you in a much more complex situation.
Very much so. The diversity in the environment, coupled with the lack of respect for the concept of mobile risk management beyond just the implementation of encryption solutions, is really an awareness campaign in and of itself. First and foremost, I think it's important that folks appreciate how proximity attacks can be leveraged. So what I mean by that is not just the wireless attack, not just the cyber attack, but the convergence of physical, wireless, and cyber attacks on these platforms.
All at once. And I think one of the catchphrases, or maybe the motto of your company, is wireless situational awareness, and that's both for Wi-Fi and cellular monitoring. That's kind of the two areas you focus in on. Is that right?
It is. What's important to note there is that most organizations do not have the situational awareness to even understand what is operating in a wireless context within their physical environments. And beyond that, they actually cannot manage the functionality of those devices specific to their location and context to mitigate the threats posed by these proximity attacks.
With many of my interviews, I set up this silly company called John Gilroy Donuts. And so if I'm working for John Gilroy Donuts and I'm kind of worried about threats, I may would I bring in your company to come into a threat assessment, or would another company do that? Or where exactly would your organization, Air Patrol Corporation, fit in?
So we have partner companies that would conduct a wireless audit to ascertain exactly what data could be leaked wirelessly from that environment. Examples are such, like the Newberry Group and Delta Risk. But beyond that, what we do is that we provide you with a capability that would allow you to fulfill the policy requirements, policies like pre-designating mobile rights and privileges for all job positions, electronically monitoring non-employees' physical and wireless activities when accessing your secure areas, whether that's your cash room or your boardroom, and then just creating what we call secure wireless zones. So how we achieve that is we basically differentiate the world into red and blue devices, blue devices being the ones that we are effectively managing specific to their location, like no camera, no microphone, no Bluetooth allowed in this room, and red devices being rogue devices that we've never seen before, but we create a physical and or cyber response to their activities.
It's one thing to manage the devices that you know, but it's a whole complete different thing to manage the unknown. I mean, this is not thinking outside the box. This is assuming there's many different boxes.
Correct. And we don't jam, and we don't violate, you know, Title 18 in terms of illegal wireless intercept. What we do though is we allow you to create a blended third dimension of response to that red device. So we can integrate with a closed circuit camera system and say, look, there's a rogue red device and a user right here who shouldn't be here. So physically go do something about it. Or from a cyber context, we can immediately tell all of our blue devices, stop receiving Bluetooth communications from said devices because we're worried about them hacking you through Bluetooth or through Wi-Fi attacks.
So we talk about best practices in the world of software development. So I guess in wireless security, the best practices, maybe it's wise to not have you do the penetration test. Is it a best practice to have, you know, ABC company doing a separate company from yours doing the test because you may be biased?
Oh, yeah, we don't like to mix and match. We train the best wireless auditors out there, and they come in and provide that assessment, which is objective. And then they write your policies that would create requirements for solutions that are not specific to ours, but solutions that would allow you to have wireless situational awareness and dynamic policy management. To your point, it's not just about taking away capability. It could be something like endowing capability specific to a location. So from your donut shop example, let's say you want to move all of your money through your iPad, but only when you're in the back room. So when you're in the back room, we could add an application to your iPad so you can move money only when you're there. And if anyone were to steal that iPad, knowing that you could move money from that, they would be limited because if they weren't in the physical location that was designated to move the money, the application wouldn't exist. Does that make sense?
Sure, makes sense. Speaking of locations, just last week, Roger Baker was at a location at AFSCME Breakfast, and he talked about health IT, and he talked about mobile devices. What I'd like to do is maybe take a quick break when we come back. Talk more about security and mobile devices. And there are some agencies that are looking at deploying 100,000 mobile devices here in the next year. And perhaps we should offer some guidelines for them. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Tom Kellerman, Chief Technology Officer at Air Patrol Corporation.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the only radio station dedicated to news for and about the federal government and government contractors. Find us at federalnewsradio.com.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at techsystems.com, TEKsystems.com.
This holiday season, think about those who have given so much in the name of freedom. The Combat Soldiers Recovery Fund provides financial aid to American soldiers, sailors, and Marines who are recovering from severe wounds in service to our nation. Every dollar goes to military hospitals in the Washington, D.C. area. No overhead, no bureaucracy. Your donation provides immediate funds for the everyday needs of service members facing a long, hard recovery far from home. To donate or to get more information, please visit Combat Soldiers Recovery Fund.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
Job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview, yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Here's Alfred Rivera, Director of Computing Services, DISA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Defense Cloud Computing, sponsored by CA Technologies.
We're going to have a new process in terms of the acquisition and the policy processes that are going to change the way we do agile development across the Department of Defense. Mm-hmm. We're going to have in place a technology that allows us to do virtual agile development from development to test to production. We're going to have this coalition of capabilities between our communities that do development.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Okay, you've heard all about how the cloud can support collaboration and save your agency money. That's great. But here's the critical question. Can a cloud be secure? CA Technologies lets you control every use of every IT asset by everyone who accesses your systems, including the cloud. So can you say yes to new capabilities? Can you empower your people while protecting your systems and data? With CA Technologies, you can. Learn how at ca.com/cloud.
What is the mission of the National Guard Joint Continuous Process Improvement, CPI, initiative? How is the Guard improving its operations, becoming more efficient, and promoting organizational excellence? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Colonel Donald Dellinger, Deployment Director of CPI within the National Guard Bureau, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit, presented by NITP, has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Tom Kellerman, who is the Chief Technology Officer for Air Patrol Corporation, talking about mobile security, mobile threats. And before the break, I mentioned this character named Roger Baker. I'm sure many listeners know who Roger Baker is, kind of a big dog in the world of IT for the federal government. He was at a AFCA event last week talking about healthcare IT, and he talked about mobile devices. And all reports are is that, you know, the VA is moving in very aggressively in this area. Right now they're focusing on iPads, but they may come up with, you know, like 100,000 mobile devices in the next couple of years and deploy those. So my question to you, Tom, is very simple. If we sat you and Roger at a lunch at the Palm, paid for by Federal News Radio, and you could give him some general advice about this, what kind of best practices would you suggest you start with, and then what kind of time frame, or would you focus on apps? Would you focus on security? I mean, give us an idea of how you'd proceed.
I would actually advocate that he pay a little bit more attention to the tactics and the stratagems being employed by the adversaries in this space. And that being said, essentially, he needs to recognize and appreciate that this phenomenon of continuous monitoring as it relates to networks needs to be applied to mobile devices. First and foremost, I would recommend that he refine his mobility policies or remote access policies to at least, at a minimum, include three elements. First element being, can you pre-designate mobile device rights and privileges for all job positions within your organization, and then define those? The second being, can you electronically monitor all non-employees' physical and wireless activities when accessing secure areas, such that you are actually continuously monitoring any radio frequency service from Wi-Fi to cellular? And then lastly, can you define secure areas that should be governed as secure wireless zones, wherein devices would have limited functionality in accordance with your policies? And that really goes back to the mantra of the following. The enemy will inevitably hack your capabilities, but how do you ensure that they are marginalized when they have that footprint within your network or within your devices? So essentially, if you're going to break into my house, how do I ensure that you break into my basement with the Rottweilers versus actually compromising the entire ecosystem?
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Sounds like a role-based authorization, what they taught many years ago, huh? The first about rights and policy.
Correct.
Yeah, role-based authorization.
It really has to come back to an appreciation that because there are given gaps in mobile security, that the technologies have not matured sufficiently to secure the environment from authentication to virus scanning to data leakage and application security, you really need to just assume that the devices inevitably will be compromised, but you can't replace them and you can't reimage them every time because you need continuity of operations. So with that being taken into account, how can you marginalize the footprint of the adversary during sensitive physical or cyber transactions?
Last week, Roger Baker said he wants to be device agnostic. Are we looking at the color of the paint on the door and not on whether it has a lock or whether the lock is locked itself? On the list top 10 threats for mobile, I don't know if apps are anywhere near there, or who cares about the flavor of the device? Are we looking at the wrong area here, or where would you suggest he focus in on?
Again, first policy, and then try to fill the gaps in mobile security. So regardless of what device it is, he should be focusing on a better form of authentication, really embracing the true virus scanning and removal technologies that are viable in this space, moving past encryption as the only solution for data leakage, better forms of browser security on the devices, better forms of application security for those devices, and then last but not least, this whole concept of mobile intelligence, understanding where the devices are, what they're trying to interact with, and being able to toggle them up or toggle them down vis-a-vis capabilities specific to that location and or context.
Sounds like
if he can try to tackle those issues alone, he can significantly reduce 90% of the threat.
Sounds like it'll be a long lunch, huh?
Yeah,
you probably have several
lunch.
Cups of coffee, several desserts in that lunch. You know, when I think of types of authentication, I think of the RSA and the RSA token event we had here a few months back. I think it was over the summer. I think some of that, the residue of that attack is still being felt today. Can you maybe give us an overview of the RSA and what happened and how that impacts mobile security?
Yeah, essentially, the technology itself that allows the one-time use password to be generated was compromised. As a result, it allowed a given nation state to attack third parties that were critical infrastructures in the ecosystem. So attacking various defense industrial base participants to leverage attacks on the DoD and attacking various financial service providers to attack their customer bases. That being said, I do believe they have fixed the problem. But in the aftermath of the attack, I think we should appreciate that more sophisticated targeted attacks will be leveraged against authentication systems that are ubiquitous for critical infrastructures, because if you can compromise the end user with those credentials and become the credentials of that end user, you can traditionally bypass all of the security mechanisms that are in place to defeat hackers, because you're trusted implicitly if you compromise those credentials.
You know, if you look at the VA right now, they have 500 iPads, and one has been lost already. Should this be a policy concern about losing, or that's going to be part of the whole general overview of how to secure the wireless network? Is that right?
No, I do think that we definitely need to understand that the threat has converged from physical to cyber to wireless. And in that nexus, we need to respond accordingly. So the loss of a device would very much damage and or undermine the capacity of an organization to secure itself, because that device could be used as basically a vector. That being said, you know, there are really kind of eight critical gaps in traditional cybersecurity postures, and one of which is the lack of continuity and the lack of visibility into the management of endpoints.
Endpoints are everywhere, especially in hospitals, and I think this is what health IT is concerned with, wireless devices in hospitals, and let's connect the dots. You know, there are physician's assistants, there are surgeons that may want to walk around with a mobile device and access information that way. Now, there's some handcuffs on in the area of health IT as far as HIPAA regulations. Are these a big concern in your world, or is this just lower on the list? Or do people, you know, this is so low on the list, let's not even worry about that.
No, it's significant. I think it's important that the healthcare industry as a whole begin to appreciate that certain physicians should only have access to sensitive patient data when in specific facilities. So there's no reason why you should have suburban hospitals information on your iPad when you're at Sibley. And there's no reason why you should have Sibley's data when you're at GW. So being able to move that data and or change the applications or the access to sensitive patient data records in accordance with your location would be fundamental in shifting that paradigm and managing the risk posed by the mobile access and the ubiquity of access by physicians.
Sophos Labs had a press release a month ago, and it said that there's 95,000 pieces of malicious code released every day. Wow. I mean, if that's not one to pick up your ears, I don't know what would be a big figure than that, huh?
No, I mean, it is what it is. Essentially, you know, I think it's very timely with the arrest of the Merchant of Death and the successful prosecution of our friend who's the Lord of War yesterday. I think we need to appreciate that there's an arms bazaar out there for malicious code, and that many organized crime groups and nation states have been fueling it. And trying to stop malicious code, this blacklisting phenomenon, is really at its wit's end, just trying to keep up with what's out there. Because the sophisticated adversary and your customers, the listeners of this show, are working for sophisticated organizations who are being targeted by sophisticated adversaries. They should recognize and appreciate that they're being targeted by targeted code, and that code will not be discerned by blacklisting technologies.
So it's got to go beyond blacklisting. If you look at security, I guess I look at, you know, not just worrying about malicious code. You probably have to look at changes in attack patterns. You have to look at roaming users going from, as you said, different physical points in your building to other areas. Multiple platform, maybe one application may be secure, another one. And this whole need for encryption could come and go depending on all kinds of things. And it's just it's getting very difficult to – it's difficult to secure an endpoint with a desktop, but this the mobile capability, it just brings it up by a factor of 4 or 5.
Agreed. Attack surface has increased dramatically. This could very well be the Achilles heel of the American empire. And I say that because our dependence on cloud computing and the ubiquitous use of mobile devices to access those cloud services is very much where the internet's going. It's the Web 3.0 experience. It's the experience where your device becomes part of your persona. It knows what you want and need. You don't need to show intention anymore. As amazing as that sounds, let's respect that if you build it, they will come, and they will not all be righteous.
Yeah, but let's take a break and come back, talk more about personas, and maybe talk about social networks and social media and how that has an implication as far as mobile security goes. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we have Tom Kellerman on, and he's the Chief Technology Officer for the Air Patrol Corporation.
Leading the way to better vision, United Healthcare Vision understands the importance of good eyesight for you and your family. That's why United Healthcare Vision programs offer federal enrollees and their families a convenient mix of independent and retail providers and industry-leading benefits for glasses, contacts, and discounts on LASIK procedures. United Healthcare Vision is the clear choice. In fact, 9 out of 10 United Healthcare Vision Fed VIP members would recommend the plan to family and friends. The Fed VIP open season period for federal employees and retirees is from November 14th through December 12th. Don't miss out on this opportunity to protect your most precious gift, the gift of sight. For more information about benefit plans and how to enroll, visit United Healthcare Vision at myuhcvision.com/fedvip. myuhcvision.com/fedvip. If you want industry-leading vision benefits and a convenient provider network, look no further than United Healthcare Vision this open season.
Federal News Radio is a proud partner of FEA, the Federal Employees Education and Assistance Fund. In the past 25 years, FEA has helped more than 21,000 federal families with over $18 million in aid. By donating just $1 per pay period, you can help federal families keep the lights on, clean up after a natural disaster, or send a kid to college. Keep your CFC dollars in the federal family and make your pledge to FEA 11185 today. Learn more at FEA.org. That's FEEA.org.
Tickets are on sale now for the third annual Caps Care Casino Night and Auction. Sponsored by Hollywood Casino at Charlestown Races on Friday, February 10th at the Hilton Alexandria Mark Center. Enjoy a night of gaming, live music, and mingling with your favorite Caps players and coaches. With all proceeds benefiting Washington Capitals Charities. Tickets are going fast, so visit WashingtonCaps.com/Casino Night to purchase yours today.
Thanksgiving dinner could one day go high-tech. A digital revolution in cooking might make even the worst cook's food perfect every time. Imagine if you could vary sugar concentrations from one side of a cake to the other. Cook a steak that has both rare and well-done sections, or
you could maybe subtract fat from one part of the meat.
Marcela Quelu of MIT's Media Lab is engineering a machine called Cornucopia that may bring cooking into the digital age.
We believe that one day we're going to be able to manipulate food in the same way they manipulate photos in Photoshop.
Sharing would be easy, too. Quelu says if he made a delicious lasagna, perhaps he could email you the precise digital recipe and
that machine will make this lasagna exactly the way that I've designed it, or he could make adaptations.
Grandma's home cooking or a slight alteration at the press of a button. For more, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What Facebook has done, they're transforming advertising. With Google click-through, you don't really know who's clicking through. But with Facebook, you can so specify who's looking at your ads that it's extremely targeted. That's why Google is so worried, because Facebook has created this closed ecosystem. They don't allow Google search into their little private kingdom. And Google is afraid that the Facebook community will become larger than Google's.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Here's your chance to get out for some fun. Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News.
You can check out the Christmas tour over in Lewis, Delaware on December the 3rd. Lewis, of course, is a very historic area. Homes from the 19th to the 21st centuries are on this tour. You can check out the packages at the Inn at Canal Square in Lewis, too, and find out a nice package where you can enjoy the tour of the town and the restaurants that are there. Or you can look at visitsouthern-delaware.com as well. Also on December the 3rd, you can tour some classic Washington homes that are really done up for the holidays. You can tour Anderson House, the Woodrow Wilson House, Dumbarton House, and Tudor Place and Gardens. These are all on one tour. They're fascinating, historic places by themselves. But December 3rd is a wonderful chance to see them all together. You can learn a lot more about the Woodrow Wilson House in the November issue of Recreation News. And you can check out the details on the tour at woodrowwilsonhouse.org.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Ruben Gomez.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're having a discussion about mobile security with a gentleman by the name of Tom Kellerman. And you can learn more about his company, the Air Patrol Corporation. You can find that at airpatrolcorp.com. And he is the chief technology officer, talking about all kinds of threats and malicious code and attacking. And, you know, if you just, you know, read any technology publication, I mean, you can't get away from the fact that Facebook is everywhere. The recent fact is that there's 800 million people on Facebook. One half of those people go to Facebook every day. That's 400 million people going to Facebook. Facebook, interestingly, has 75% overseas or not in the United States, which I think is an incredible fact. It came out on Mashable just last week. So what implications does that have for someone like you? So what you have to do is you go on an agency and they say, okay, Tom, let's come up with a policy. And oh, by the way, everyone wants to be on Facebook. I mean, that has to be part of your policy, I would think.
It does. The use of social media very much needs to become part of policy. But in the efforts to increase productivity and limit data leakage and WikiLeaks from the office, I think it's important that you have some sort of control over whether or not that application can be accessed from work.
And I think from the other side, I mean, I could be sitting in, Bogota and fire up my little computer, and I can probably, if I'm savvy enough, take a look at a profile of someone, maybe Roger Baker, find out where he's at, find out his background, where he lives. You can come up with, as we talked about earlier, a persona, or you can talk about different types of people just by surfing different social networking sites and gain a lot of information about them.
Yeah, it really does empower traditional tradecraft to a whole new level. That type of situational awareness on individuals through their profiles is highly problematic. I don't recommend that anyone use the location-based functionality of the application whatsoever, at a minimum.
Yeah, I'm always scared. I think it's Gowalla and Foursquare are out there, and I'm kind of wary of those. I mean, I think the idea is, oh, you show up at a conference and you check in, and oh, Tom's there, let's get together for coffee. Well, you know, the problem is that if I'm at a conference in Orlando, then people know that I'm not home. And bad things happen when people can put two and two together that way. I'm sure that happens all the time. One phrase that pops up when I talk about security is something called an advanced persistent threat. Maybe you can describe what an APT is and how that has implications for mobile security, Tom.
APT is a general term which refers to targeted specific code that's never been seen before. That's the advanced part. That has infiltrated a system traditionally having compromised the credentials of trusted systems and or networks. So it maintains persistence because you don't really know where it is because it's trusted. And that threat actually exists for a long period of time. It aligns very well with the traditional Chinese paradigm of a thousand grains of sand approach and maintaining that colony inside your systems to maintain omniscience. Now, there are many different forms of this threat. The word itself has been overused, but basically it refers to targeted attack code that's never been seen before that has infiltrated your systems and then maintains this what we call digital insider presence within that system.
And it could be done through a wireless approach, too.
Very much so. And more than likely, it has been done to a myriad of mobile users within the federal community as it relates to compromising their BlackBerries and or iOS and or droids to a point where they're just traditionally acting, but the device itself has been compromised. Now, what makes that more frightening is this reality that beyond a traditional digital insider APT threat as it relates to your desktop, this mobile device now can attack your environment three different ways. The device itself can attack the back-end network through cyber attacks, traditionally. It can attack proximity attacks of anything around it, so it could be launching Bluetooth and Wi-Fi attacks against anyone that you're just having coffee with or anyone you're having dinner with. And then finally, it can leverage physical attacks in the sense that all of a sudden you're having an important dinner that's on your calendar and the microphone turns on and starts recording and relaying your entire conversation overseas.
Isn't that something? You probably, theoretically, is this, like, this is not theoretical, this is actual, this has probably happened.
It has happened, and it is happening.
Wow. Never even dreamed of that taking place.
If you look at the public disclosure of what occurred in the CNCI, the Comprehensive National Cyber Initiative that was championed by Melissa Hathaway, great piece of work, by the way. To that point, the public version of the CNCI, what was released to the public, did mention this whole function of what they call proximity attacks. And the proximity attacks are those attacks that I'm describing now, the capacity to leverage new technologies for traditional tradecraft beyond just cyber. And mobile devices are perfect for that.
Well, if I were a bad guy and I were targeting someone in the Pentagon, I may want to target someone like you, your company. I mean, you're probably as high on the list as some of the people because you, I guess you're like a police officer. If you're preventing attacks, you may be part of the people getting attacked. Is that right?
Very much.
Hmm.
It's difficult. But we make one assumption, as I've stated in the past, that other organizations don't. We inevitably assume that we will be compromised. The way we operate as an organization, the way we operate with our customers, the way we advise them is, given the fact that inevitably that mobile device will be compromised, how do you marginalize the presence of the adversary to a point where they can't waste the resources anymore to maintain persistence? And what I mean by that is, again, if you're going to break into my house, you're going to break into my basement with my Rottweilers. I'm going to limit your functionality and your capacity to do proximity attacks against my neighbors in the real world and cyber attacks against my back-end networks because I'm going to control your functionality and capabilities specific to my sensitive environments, whether they be in the physical world or cyber. So, for example, I'm doing something very sensitive right now. I'm banking online. I'm moving money. At this point in time, my capability will toggle down my functionality of my device. My 2011 new Apple 4S is now going to be limited to only be able to act with that application. No SMS texts, no location-based apps, no Wi-Fi, no Bluetooth. I essentially will dumb down the device, brick it, as they call it, to a point where it can only functionally transact, and then it comes back to life after the authentication session has ended.
Hmm. Let's talk about a real specific type of an attack. If I'm sitting at my desk and I get an email and it says, we'll click on this this site, and it's shortened, let's say. I may be kind of wary, and I may hover over it and try to see what it is. But if I'm sitting, having lunch with you, Tom, and we're talking about the Redskins, and then we're talking about this and that, and my kids are this, and, you know, it's raining outside, and all of a sudden I pick up my iPhone and a message. I may be more vulnerable to hit that URL. It's just psychologically, mobile devices are going to make you more vulnerable than sitting at your desk. I mean, it's just, you should start with that.
Very much so. I would also suggest that, let's say you can implicitly trust the people that are sending you email to click on links. At a minimum, you should verify whether or not it's them, whether or not the message has been spoofed. You should always be running your headers in the background and ascertain whether the return path is the same as reply to. If those two R's match up, then at least it's not a spoofed one, and that at least you maybe could trust that link. But many of the spear phishing attacks that have been leveraged in the past are leveraging spoofed email addresses that are using you from the perspective of social engineering to click on things or download things that may be prevalent in attack.
For example, if I got an email from, I don't even know which email address is, let's say it's TomKellerman@abc.com, say it comes in, I go, oh yeah, this is from Tom, he's my buddy, I know what it is, I'll just... And guess what? That can be spoofed rather easily, and I can
Correct.
Be duped into placing malicious code not only in my machine but back in my network.
Very much so. And that's how most attacks have been leveraged of late. But what you're seeing is an evolution of these types of spear phishing attacks to incorporate the social networking dynamics as well as the mobile dynamics of today's day. And Twitter, for that matter, from my perspective, represents the perfect storm with the shortened URLs and the capacity of people to implicitly trust and click on links and to post things. From a hacker's perspective, Twitter is awesome.
And everyone seems to be tweeting these days, that's for sure.
Well, that's because too many people are narcissists.
I heard Paula Poundstone do a little thing over the weekend, and she's talking about Twitter. And it seems to be pervasive and everywhere, pervasive in the world of malicious code. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to bring out the crystal ball and talk about the next 5 to 10 years as far as where this technology is going to head and maybe some best practices now that someone like Roger Baker can implement to prevent having headaches down the road, and talk about different platforms and where they're headed. I mean, everyone's looking at Apple these days, and maybe that is something we should consider. Maybe we should consider other types of equipment. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we have Tom Kellerman on the line here, and he is the Chief Technology Officer at Air Patrol Corporation.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com. To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships to understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity? Working on a cloud computing initiative? Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TEKSystems.com.
Hey, Eagles fans, tickets to All-American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are now on sale. Get them online 24-7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletics Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena. Catch the Eagles' next home game Tuesday, November 22nd against Quinnipiac at 7:30 p.m.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday here at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Please join me this week and listen to my special guest, Peter Thiele, chairman of the Children's Charities Foundation, which hosts annually the BB&T Classic basketball tournament scheduled for December the 4th this year. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, That moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Join a firm at their December 8th luncheon for an in-depth discussion of government contracting trends and techniques. Hear highlights on what's hot and what's not in federal acquisition as Tech America unveils usage trends for IDIQs, GWACs, and schedule contracts. A lively panel moderated by Wyatt Cash of AOL Government will follow with experts from NASA, GSA, NIH, and Navy discussing innovations in government contracting. Lunch and learn with a firm at the Sofitel Hotel on Thursday, December 8th at noon. Register today at affirm.org.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Temin and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking about mobile security with Tom Kellerman. He's the Chief Technology Officer for a company called Air Patrol Corporation. And we're talking about security, so we really can't get into the nitty-gritty too much here. If you would like to learn more, you can go to an event on December 7th. It's right in Arlington there near the Metro stop. And you can hear Tom give a more thorough and detailed discussion about some of these threats we talked about generically here. If you want more information, you can go to the event at AF, as in Frank, AFEI.org, and go to events. And this is a conference on security and resilience, managing the risk. So if you're sitting back in an agency and scratching your head and going, well, he really didn't talk about this new Android application and how that's going to have implications with mobile, well, you may want to go to this event and hear what Tom has to say, or grab him afterwards and say, well, Tom, where can I find more information? It'd be a great place because they're going to have some brilliant people there. One of the brilliant people is Dr. Terry Gouditis. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Tom?
Very much so. One of the smartest people in the game.
Yeah, she is. She's brilliant. And I would think it's worth going and paying to go to that conference just to hear what Terry has to say, because she's very insightful and has got a very interesting background. And so AFEI.org for more information on the event on December 7th. And you can hear what Tom and Terry have to say about mobile security. I guess one question that people ask you is, so what are the most important things? What are the critical things I should worry about? What should Roger Baker worry about with this big deployment of mobile devices? Maybe you could give us two or three points to consider here, Tom.
Well, first of all, can you even ascertain whether authorized and unauthorized mobile devices are in your environment to begin with? Now that virtual reality is existing because your cyberspace environment is extended now through the cloud to all these mobile devices, can you at least manage the mobile devices that you've approved, and do you know if there are any rogue devices in that environment? And specifically, can you actually either empower those devices with newfangled technology specific to their locations and or context, or can you manage down and or mitigate certain capabilities specific to those contexts because of the proximity threat that they present?
So first part is inventory. Find out what you got and where it's at.
Exactly right. And there's a lack of that. And so how can you continuously monitor mobile devices when you don't know what's there, what's approved, what isn't, and what capabilities are allowed on those devices?
I know people who have had penetration tests, and people come into their companies, and many of the chief technology officers are surprised at what devices are found. They don't. So even physical devices that are in a building, people have a hard time doing an inventory of that. How in the world can an agency do an inventory of just what they have? I mean, this is a challenge for big companies, small companies, for federal companies, for banks, for just about everyone today.
Very much. And the challenge resides simply in the fact that there is not one given technology that will solve this problem. And they can't rely on one technology to solve and manage mobile risk and or cybersecurity risk. It has to be a combination of policies, procedures, and various technologies to create defense in depth.
Defense in depth is very important. At the conference coming up on December 7th, I imagine you or maybe Terry or someone else would talk about the future and what kind of threats are on the horizon. Perhaps we can finish up the interview here with where you see this whole threat capability going, and how, you know, should we just all head for Wyoming and buy a cabin?
No, but it's interesting. If you ever read the manifesto by the Unabomber, how he said the end of days would come through computers. I don't think that's possible. The enemy isn't going to try to destroy our infrastructure through cyber. I don't believe in cyber war. I believe in cyber espionage. I believe in the fact that non-state actors around the world will become more and more powerful because they'll use cyber and mobile attacks and whatnot to empower themselves asymmetrically in their cultures. So the long-term thing is really going to happen. As I suggest, in 10 years, there's only going to be 20 relevant regimes in the world, the G20. And the rest of the world will basically be back in the dark ages when it comes to regimes and civilization and control of society. That all being said, I would say that attacks will begin to move further down the stack in the sense that the ubiquitous nature of the cloud environment and the reality in which the cloud environment, whereas it may improve your capacity to defend against denial of service attacks, also allows your adversary to attack every one of your partners and all of your systems at once. And it's much like if you think of a mailman. Traditionally, as an ethical hacker, you would have to go from one mailbox to the next mailbox to the next mailbox in an apartment building. But in the cloud environment, I can open the entire wall of mailboxes with one mail key. And that reality, coupled with people implicitly trusting the personas and the utilities of their devices that they stare at every 5 seconds, creates a perfect storm for what you would almost call telepathy.
So I think a company like yours might provide assistance as far as policy goes, but maybe as far as training goes, and maybe it's human beings more than bits and IP addresses, just as far as best practice for answering emails or something as simple as clicking on a shortened URL.
From a pro bono perspective, we strive to assist as many people as we can. We're not a services-based organization, but much of my time and my team's time is spent in essentially espousing the best practice. The best practice, though, based upon the realities of the CNCI, where the offense must inform the defense, wherein you have to have a certain amount of respect for the stratagems and tactics employed by our adversaries before you can even begin to think about defeating them. And so what I would suggest to your audience is start playing more chess.
One chess game that's being played right now is with a threat called Stuxnet. And some people are wondering where that originated, and I don't know if you want to share your opinion on that or your thoughts.
I don't have an opinion on where it originated. I would say that there's a significant historical impact of said worm. That polymorphic threat did usher in the leveraging of cyber attacks in a kinetic environment. So the blended attack, wherein you can have a physical manifestation of a cyber attack. What the biggest problem, the unintended consequence of developing that type of attack mechanism is the following. It's now been replicated. So in the underground, once you create a blueprint for the perfect weapon, which Stuxnet was, you have to realize that because you've developed it, it may have taken you a year, a year and a half to develop the intricacies of it and how it would attack a system and maintain persistence and to tweak those systems and yada, yada, yada. Now the adversaries, the underground economy, the non-state actors, the other state actors who have analyzed this code can reproduce the same type of attack, and it only takes them a couple weeks. And because of that curve, that learning curve has been shortened. And because of that, even though it may have been for the benefit of whomever, the reality is now that capability can be utilized through frameworks like Metasploit. So even someone who doesn't know how to hack can download Metasploit and use the blueprint for the Stuxnet attack. And as long as they can find themselves a couple 0 days that they can pay for in the underground economy, they themselves can be as powerful as the actor that launched that.
So the strategy here is even if a company develops something like that, should they release it, it could come back and attack them.
We live in an aquatic ecosystem online, and anything that's released out there will inevitably touch you. If you release a shark into a swimming pool and you continue swimming in it, it inevitably will bite you. So we need to respect the fact that we are not the only ones sharing information, even though we're sharing it in a very limited fashion. That's the good guys, of course. But that the level of information sharing in the underground economy and the shadow economy and between the hacker crews that are both gray and black hats is far greater than ours. So the second that anyone chooses to develop a new security technology or a new type of mechanism to infiltrate systems, once anyone sees it, it will be shared widely.
We're going to have to end our interview here, Tom. It's fascinating. We'd love to have you back and talk more about this. It's probably going to change significantly in 6 to 8 months. You have been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Just spent the last hour talking about mobile security with a gentleman named Tom Kellerman, Chief Technology Officer, Air Patrol Corporation. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Find every Federal News Radio story and interview on the federalnewsradio.com news stream. A quick look at the latest news as it's posted to federalnewsradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTF.
CNN Radio, I'm Andy Rose. After more than 24 deaths have been confirmed, Egypt's prime minister is asking protesters to go home. Those demonstrators